The unsurpassed, penetrating, and perfect truth is seldom met with, even in 100,000 myriad kalpas. Now we can see and hear it, we can remember and accept it. I vow to make the Buddha's truth one with myself. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. We got the perfect day today, didn't we? This morning I'd like to talk about, in a way I'm talking about, some teaching that's found in the monastic office, which I first encountered quite a long time ago. But within talking about that particular teaching, perhaps what I'm really talking about is the mosaic of the Buddhist teachings. How you hear a teaching and you're working with it, and then you encounter something else in a scripture and it helps move you and see a different side of the teaching. And over the months, your understanding of something grows and grows and grows. Now, I'm going to start by reading something from the monastic office. This, you may be familiar with this because we use it for some of the ceremonies here. Basically, it contains ceremonial that we do here, adapted from the Soto Zen Church in Japan. And the piece that I'm going to read is in the introduction that's read when we do our renewal of vows ceremony twice each month. The book was published in the early 90s, which was, I was a layperson then. I hadn't been training very long. And so you can imagine me reading this with not very much Buddhist practice or exposure to teaching under my belt. I'd probably been coming up here for perhaps 3-4 years, something like that. And ever since I read this piece of teaching, we hear it every 2 weeks, and even if I'm in a daze and I'm not really paying attention, the minute you get to this, my ear catches it. A reverent heart is difficult to beget. A good heart is difficult to give rise to. This is why the scripture says, "Do not treat small defilements lightly or regard them to be harmless. Even though drops of water are minute, they gradually fill a large container. It takes but a moment to produce a defilement whose calamities will fall down upon you incessantly. Once you have lost your human body, you may not regain one for 10,000 kalpas. A robust physique does not last, for it is as a runaway horse. Human life is impermanent. It flows away as does water down a mountain. Although you exist today, tomorrow is hard to guarantee. Each of you in this assembly must be wholehearted in your devotion to diligent training. Be careful not to give in to laziness, negligence, idleness, drowsiness, or thoughts of self-indulgence. At night, as you concentrate your mind, keep the three treasures in your thoughts. Do not beget deep regrets in later generations because of fatigue but brought on by your vacuity, errors, and vanity. Each of you here assembled, be wholehearted in your endeavors to live according to these precepts. Train and study in accordance with the teachings." So I was terrified. Which is interesting because I read this scripture to a friend of mine who is also a Buddhist, and she said, "Oh, that's so encouraging." I thought, well, good for you. First of all, you know how we all have reactions to words. Even if you are told the synonym for the word, the synonym doesn't cause the reaction. But there's just kind of, well, defilement was one of those. And it's taken me years to get past just shrinking back from the word defilement. When I first read this, what I heard was, there's no room for error. Defilements are like stains, permanent ones. Defilements are a form of uncleanness. In the description of, you know, the vigilance and all of that, I got an impression that somehow in Buddhist training, one had to be somewhat like a Coldstream guard. You know, the Coldstream guards, they guard the palace and somewhere. The queen. It's the queen's. And they're the ones with the tall hats that just stand and they don't even move their eyes. You know, and I had this vigilance conveyed to me, stiffness, all of that. Sort of something that if a defilement came, it couldn't knock you over. And then when I got to the part of describing how one, the sorts of things one should guard against, you know, laziness, drowsiness, self-indulgence, well, it was sort of like someone was painting a picture of me. Because, so anyway, and I'm telling you this, please don't think that I still retain these initial impressions, but I think this happens to all of us. We can read a teaching and not see the kindness in that teaching. It can just appear threatening somehow. So, you know, time passes by, and I notice that we tend to chant the litany of the Great Compassionate One a great deal. And I thought, surely this can be no error, you know. It's and what really got me was there were the defilements again. She's called the defilement-free one. And I'm going to read it. Sounds different when you read it than when you chant it somehow. Not all of it, but just part of it here. His life is the completion of meaning. It is pure. It is that which makes all beings victorious and cleanses the path of all existence. Now that's an interesting line because in a way that's saying exactly the same thing that this was saying, but in words that I could hear. Om, O thou seer, world transcending one, O hail to the great Bodhisattva. All is defilement, defilement, earth, earth. Do the work within my heart. Here's the person, us, saying, yes, this is how it is. Help me. Help me. O great victor, I hold on, hold on. To Indra, the creator, I cry. Move, move my defilement-free one. Come, come, hear, hear, a joy springs up in me. Speak, speak, give me direction. Awakened, awakened, I have awakened. And in those few short lines, we hear someone moving from being overcome by the world full of defilements to a pure, enlightened, awakened state. Takes time, and that's why we chant it every day, I'm getting. And then one day I noticed, sitting right where you're sitting now, is what I just talked about, is when you read the monastic office and the description of vigilance and training with the precepts, you have someone right over there who is showing vigilance, even holding the rope of the precept in his hand. And over here, we have the great Bodhisattva. And what's really nice about it is, this is, I never appreciated this until recently, that this is where you're sitting, you are manifesting the middle way. It's, yeah, there it is. And so, we can approach the teaching of the defilements, which we'll get on to later, either through the vigilant attitude of a Chalanatha, you know, protecting us, and Avalokiteshvara, soothing us, pouring the sweet water of compassion over us when we're overcome. And you can never get too far in one direction, because there's the other one right there. Possibly why they talk about him as the fierce manifestation of compassion. So, what are defilements? And I got curious, so I looked it up. And it's one of the things that there's a nice list of in the Abhidharma, which is part of the Buddhist Tripitaka, which is, and it's the Abhidharma is, one description was, a collection of the entire psychophysical world. It was 7 volumes of, and there are lists. And here is one rendition of what the defilements are. This is really juicy. Covetousness and unrighteous greed. Ill will, anger, hostility or malice, denigration or detraction, contempt, domineering or presumption, envy, jealousy, avarice, selfishness, hypocrisy or deceit, obstinacy, obduracy, rivalry, conceit, arrogance, haughtiness, vanity, pride, negligence, and heedlessness. Now, there's a lot more than 16 there, but they in there, there's actually little groupings of things. So that's quite a list. We know it in another form, right? Greed, anger, and delusion. I think you could take these very nicely and put them in 3 piles. So where do they come from, these defilements that are going to rain down upon us incessantly? To understand that, we have to take a little side trip through another part of the Buddha's teachings, the teaching of karma and the teaching of dependent origination. Karma is something that is the result of action of body, speech, or mind. Some of it, well, I'll read about that later. Actually, let me do this now. This is a nice statement of it. This is Mu Soeng, The Heart of the Universe. It's actually a commentary on the Heart Sutra. Hindrances or defilements are filters that individuals accrue as a result of conditioning during development from infancy to childhood to adolescence to adulthood. The Buddha's teaching is that behind all the accumulated filters, the mind remains essentially untainted. The metaphor here is a mirror. A dirty mirror, when clean, shines. In the same way, when all the conditioning filters have been removed by trust in wisdom, in emptiness, the mind recovers its original joyfulness and hindrances and fears have no place to take hold. So filters are, for me, a very useful way of looking at it. For me, fear has always been something that I have not just trained with as a Buddhist, but you know, I can remember fear in its forms of dominance since I was very tiny. So if one is a fearful person, one is always looking for scary things. Is that not true? Yeah, because you can never be... You know, I got to the point, a lot of you have heard me talk ad infinitum about my lifelong relationship with spiders, but that fear got me to the point where unconsciously when I entered a room, what I'm doing is scanning for that place up there where the ceiling and the wall meet, because that's where they are. And I would, you know, and that was a filter that I became completely unconscious of. It was just, you know, and of course then the next thing is sort of like somebody has, if there is one there, it became an emergency. And I remember one time I sat down at the Berkeley Priory when I was going there, and I sat down on my cushion and there was a drape hanging down and there was a big spider on it. And I got up and I went out and I said to Reverend Holden, there's a big spider on the curtain right next to my cushion. He said, sit somewhere else. You know, I was hoping to be rescued, you know. Where am I here? Karma, we always think of as being the kind of filters that act like my fear filter. But in fact, the karma that we don't talk about so much is the karma that, the filter that is there where one looks at everything in this world and sees it as being full of possibilities and beauty and so forth. That's another kind of filter. And if you've met people who live like that, it's really noticeable. It's quite contagious. People feel quite drawn to them. When we come into existence, you know, we enter not just this world, but we enter, you might say, the universe of universes, and here we are. We're born in an immeasurable, swirling mass of conditions. Is that not so? You know, most of them have little impact that we know of on our life, but I forget what it is that happens when there are sunspots, but it affects things here on Earth, and it's happening millions of miles away. But most of the time, we're completely unaware of conditions that exist beyond our own circumstance. And as the conditions arise, we react to them. We're drawn to them. We're not drawn to them. We're repelled by them. Or they're completely neutral to us. But each time we encounter conditions, we're being shaped and formed. Someone said, you know, we spend our life creating ourselves. Like creating being a grown adult terrified of spiders, not a 4-year-old. And the Buddha taught that because this arises, this arises. This passes away, it can cause other things. We are constantly being influenced by everything and everybody and everyone and around us. Just as you can think of the defilements or karma as filters through which we see things, I find it helpful to think of the effects of karma or of the hindrances, the defilements, when they have taken root in us, as being energy. All the things that shape us are energy. Recently, I've been doing a lot of reading commentaries on the Scripture of Great Wisdom, the Heart Sutra, because the Chico Meditation Group has been studying that for the past couple of months. And it was a nice return to the teachings on emptiness. The fact that although we're constantly being created, there's nothing really there, and there's something absolutely there. You know, I mean, we have existence that we use, but all of it is in constant motion the whole time. Energy. So we won't go down the path of emptiness and shunyata, but just to say that the hindrances, our karma, influences what we're attracted to, what we dislike, what our choices are, what our tendencies are. And so, for one who has a generous dose from that list of defilements that I read, over time, the force, you know, to be contemptuous is something that grows. I doubt that a four-year-old, you know, at that point can even express anything resembling contempt. But seeds are being sown, and by the time, you know, you're 67 years old, it can be quite a powerful force through which to view everything around us. And here's where Achalanatha comes in, because once either we become aware ourselves or a good spiritual friend points out to us something, you know, a reaction for a lot of us is, I didn't know I did that, you know. I didn't know I was like that. My good friends have been pointing out to me for quite some time my habit of complaining. I didn't know it was complaining. You know, because in my mind, I was simply observing. Through what, you might ask, you know, it's like... So once we become aware of a defilement which has come in the ascendancy, that's where vigilance comes in, the vigilance that was being spoken of in that introduction to the precepts. Because we just don't see it. And time again, I've gone back to those people who help us, and I'm saying, you know, you told me I was complaining. I don't see it. What was it you saw? What was it that made you see that? And slowly I'm beginning to learn, but, you know, it's taken, 72 years to gather this much strength. I don't have all that much time left to help soften it and dissolve it. It's really easy at this point, once we actually can accept the fact that there are things in our life which cause us and others suffering. And it's really easy to feel hopeless at times. Hopeless, helpless, powerless. You know, I see it and I don't know what to do. Or even worse, you know, I'm a worm. This is the place where we need to learn about another kind of energy in Buddhist practice. We've all heard about the awakening of bodhicitta, the mind that seeks the way. Bodhicitta, once aroused, is powerful enough to overcome anything. And it can take various forms or flavors, I guess you would say, in our life. Vigor is one of them. You know, vigor is one of the paramitas, those things that help us cross to the other shore, to have vigor. I think Reverend Master Mahon has talked about this on a number of occasions. Vigor is a wonderful attribute. And actually, I've learned for myself, I never saw myself as a particularly vigorous person, but you can be sitting in your chair and be vigorous. Reverend Master Jiyu, I'm told, would sit there, you know, and she couldn't move barely, but she was not apathetic, helpless, or anything else. From I did not know her that way. I think just a couple of weeks ago, Reverend Master Mahon gave a talk on making resolves. Am I remembering correctly that it was recently? That's another thing, is like, today, this is what I'm going to try to do. Today, this is my focus. Today, I don't want it to slide by me unnoticed. That has as much power as the power of any defilement. Sometimes we can feel like things get out of control. You know, it's like a bicycle going down a hill. Or we can be in a state where we can understand the difficulties that people who are substance addicted go through. That the draw, you know, the draw to trash somebody else. I mean, you can be so strong. That's a bad example, but it can be so strong. It can be so strong that you don't, you know, it's almost uncontrollable. That's where some people use things like having a rosary either on your wrist or in your pocket. You know, sometimes when things are so strong, what you really need, you know, Litany of the Great Compassion, hold on, I hold on, you can just hold on. And sometimes that's all you can do, you know. Shut your mouth and hold on. As we start to work on something, we can notice exactly what was talked about in that preface to the precepts, that the things in our life, they've talked about small drops of water filling a large container. Well, small drops of water made the Grand Canyon. And small drops of water in our practice can wear away any defilement that someone wants to toss out. What we need to be willing to do is accept that those things dissolve drop by drop by drop. You know, we rarely see ourselves letting go of our anger. What we do see is that an occasion arises that normally would have sent us into a tizzy, and it was like nothing. You say, whoa, where did that go? So we have to have the faith that in fact the forces that you might say that brought us to a certain point all happened very slowly. You know, a few times in a lifetime, there's an event or something which is big enough that it wreaks, that it, I can't think, say the word, it creates change immediately and very noticeably. And that can be, you know, in any direction, but those experiences are few and far between. What we're working with, something that is soft. It's like the, what is it? The angel's wings brushing against the mountain. It's not going to take that long, but. And when we're looking at this, one thing that we always have to keep in mind is that the temptation, you know, Avalokiteshvara and Achalanatha are not opposites. And our mind really likes opposites. And so as we're working on things softly and gently and dissolving them, it isn't as though we were bad and we're going to be good. All we're doing is weakening one kind of energy that pushes us in directions which are unwholesome. And we're creating another kind of energy that moves us towards seeing the fact that it's almost impossible to see the fact of our interconnectedness with one another when I'm good and everything else is bad, or vice versa. Yeah. Throughout all of this, none of it could take place if we were not firmly rooted in our meditation practice. Because we're, you know, quite often when we're in the thick of things, it's very difficult to see clearly. And our meditation practice is that place. It's where we can actually see things clearly, if we're willing. More important than, well, not just as important, is it's a place where we can more clearly see what needs to be done. It's the place where, when we sit quietly, we realize that things that we said to someone probably weren't the best way to speak to another person. We can see not that I'm bad, but that there's something I can do here to soften what happened between us. It's the place where we can see the teaching on ceasing from evil and doing good. Evil being that which causes suffering, of course. Evil. We always have a choice. We can grip tighter, or we can start to do this. And here's the best part. The basic teaching of the Buddha is that the mind is originally uncontaminated. There is no concept of original sin in Buddhism. Defilements accrue to the mind, but they do not adhere. This is the basis of Buddha's teaching of nirvana, of liberation, of awakening, all of which are a recovery of what was already there, rather than an acquiring of something new. So if we do this work, what it means is that drop by drop, minute by minute, we're returning home. Thank you.